This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. It's Reporters Roundtable Thursday, so we have a chance now to talk with the Northwest Indiana media about the stories put out in print and online. And we begin the program today with Times chief political reporter Dan Carton, who's already, even though it hasn't officially started, with Organization Day, hasn't officially started. That is the 2022 General Assembly session. Dan, thanks for joining us on the program today.
Happy to be here.
Well, we start first talking about a look at what the 2022 General Assembly session might look like. And they've already had at least the official start with Organization Day. Tell us first in your stories how Organization Day has shaped up at the State House.
Organization Day is just the ceremonial first day, the opening session of the new General Assembly. This wasn't an election year, so they didn't. There's not a lot of new people, but there is one new guy from Northwest Indiana, State Senator Rodney Pohl Jr., mm-hmm. who succeeded State Senator Karen Talion, who resigned on November 1st. So Senator Pohl was sworn in to represent the 4th District in Porter County and LaPorte County, and he took his place in the Senate for this upcoming session. But aside from that, there wasn't much official business. There is sort of a lot of unofficial stuff going on, and that's going to make for an interesting legislative session here.
Mm-hmm. I understand that it's very possible that lawmakers may come back to the State House, although not to begin their session. That's not till January. But they may come back to take care of some other business that is related to the governor and to the COVID-19 pandemic.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a sizable contingent of legislators in the Republican-controlled General Assembly who are upset that Indiana still has a COVID-19 public health emergency in effect. The emergency provisions aren't as extensive as they once were. If you remember, last year, the governor, early in the pandemic, before there was a vaccine and before people knew much about the virus, the governor shut down some businesses, implemented a statewide mask mandate, things like that. None of that's in effect anymore. But some of these Republican legislators are still upset that that was allowed to happen anyway. So they're determined to end the public health emergency, despite the fact that Indiana is showing signs of increasing numbers of COVID-19 cases. So the plan that they're working toward is to take the things that are still in the governor's emergency order, put them into law, and then that would allow the public health emergency to just expire, because everything that the emergency order is doing would be done in law. The General Assembly, by suspending a bunch of rules, can come back and get that all done in one day, and they're looking at doing so in December. The big issues are Indiana is getting extra money from the federal government for Medicaid services and for food assistance for Hoosiers because there is a public health emergency, so they want to keep that money flowing. Then the state also needs some extra authorizations to continue immunizations for 5 to 11-year-olds that are contained in the governor's emergency order. If they put it into state law, then they wouldn't need the emergency order.
Is that what the two House resolutions that are going to be considered have to do with? There's basically ways to kind of set aside the public emergency and deal with these matters?
Well, those are actually, those resolutions would just end the public health emergency immediately. Mm-hmm. And there was some talk of just doing that last year. Legislators who were upset about the mask mandate, business closures and things like that, filed these resolutions to just say, the public health emergency is over, which is provided for in the law right now. Anytime the governor issues an emergency order, the General Assembly can override him. There hasn't been a majority in the legislature who support that at this point. Last year, it was just a few, some of the more contrarian legislators who were pushing it. This year, there's more reasonable lawmakers, including some of the committee leaders in the House, who are backing this. So I think that's a pretty good signal to the governor that They need to. He needs to work with the legislature to keep the things that he wants to keep and put them into law, and then forget about the emergency order because these legislators are saying their constituents are upset about it, fed up with it, even though it doesn't actually do much right now.
Mm-hmm. I know that your stories also include one that I guess is going to be, a prelude to what the 2022 General Assembly session might refer to, and that is taking a look at some possibilities that there may be some tax cuts in the works, at least when lawmakers come back officially in January. Can you tell us more about that story?
Yes, absolutely. This is something that's been going on since the start of the year. There's been several rounds of federal COVID-19 assistance paid to the states and paid to individuals. You remember the $1,400 checks that everybody got back in March, April. So as people have spent that money, it's circulated through the economy. So people bought stuff with their money, and they paid sales tax on it, and businesses recorded that as earnings, and they're going to pay income tax on it, and they paid it out to workers who paid income taxes on it. So the state has been getting a ton of unanticipated tax revenue compared to what they were expecting even just earlier in the year. One of the things Indiana does when it has a lot of extra money is it sends it right back to Hoosiers instead of, like other states might, invest it in other things. But the Republican General Assembly also sees the federal infrastructure bill that just got signed into law, even though it was opposed by all the Republicans representing Indiana in Congress. That's going to bring about $8 billion to Indiana for roads and bridges, broadband internet, and a lot of things that state funds usually pay for. So there isn't the same kind of urgency to reinvest this extra money that the state has taken in. So they're looking at different possibilities for tax cuts, including reducing the income tax rate. House Speaker Todd Houston said they're also looking at possibly increasing the exemption. So right now, the first $1,000 of your earnings are exempt from income tax. That was put in place in the 70s when the average income was about $8,000. So you could exclude about 1/8 of your earnings from income tax. If they bumped that up to, say, $8,000, that would save a lot of people, particularly lower-income people, a lot of money in taxes because they wouldn't have to pay income taxes on their first $8,000 in earnings. That would give lower-income people a bigger tax break compared to just reducing the tax rate, where obviously if you make more money, you pay less in taxes.
One of the points in your stories that came out in print and online as well, and we referred to it a little earlier here about the fact that State Senator Rodney Paul Jr. Was officially put in as a member of the Democratic Party in the Indiana Senate. And he talked a little bit, I guess, about what he'd like to bring up here in the session coming up. What did he bring up that in front of during his official visit to the State House here recently? And what else is likely to come up the General Assembly will bring up, in particular the Republican Party?
Yeah, so Senator Paul, among the things he wants to do, he's actually made it pretty clear that he wants to try and continue Senator Talian's legacy. A couple of the things she was working on was increasing the rates Indiana pays in workers' compensation cases, which haven't been increased in about a decade, even though the price of everything generally has gone up during that same time frame. He also wants to continue Senator Talian's efforts to legalize marijuana in Indiana. This is actually a push that the Democratic Party as a whole is going to be making this year. They believe it's a winning issue for them that a majority, maybe even a supermajority of Hoosiers, favor legalizing marijuana. And the Indiana General Assembly, controlled by Republicans, isn't interested in doing that, hasn't moved forward on a variety of proposals over the years with that. Governor Holcomb also has said that so long as marijuana is still classified as a controlled substance by the federal government, he won't sign any legislation legalizing marijuana. So that looks like it's not going to be moving forward this year, even though the Democrats are going to be making a big push for it. Senator Paul also is interested in increasing teacher pay, education funding, and finding ways to recruit and retain more teachers this has been an ongoing issue in Indiana where teachers claim they haven't been getting the respect they deserve, they haven't been getting the pay they deserve. The new budget, the new state budget enacted last year, or in the last session, kind of sets a floor of about $40,000 for teachers in the state.
Mm-hmm.
Some school districts are moving in that direction, but not fast enough as the cost of everything else goes up. And, there's a lot of rules and regulations and other requirements that the state has put on teachers that, teachers are looking at the job market right now. They've got a bachelor's degree, most of them, master's degree for many of them, and they're saying, I can make a lot more money doing something else somewhere else, and they're going in that direction.
Does it look like we're going to see any interesting topics come up in this upcoming General Assembly session? And you mentioned what the House Speaker, Todd Houston, has offered in his remarks that came up during Organization Day. But will the Senate Republicans be as enthusiastic about making some changes ahead as the House apparently might?
Yeah, and that's actually been the issue, that the House Speaker Houston, the House Republicans in general, are very gung-ho on reducing taxes. Senate Republicans usually are more conservative than the House, if that's possible, and they are somewhat reluctant to do this in a non-budget year. Indiana adopts a new state budget every other year in odd-numbered years, so we just did a budget this year that'll cover 2022 and the first half of 2023, and then in the 2023 session they'll pass a new two-year budget. So the Senate Republicans are saying, let's maybe wait and see how all this federal stimulus money flows through the economy before we permanently reduce taxes, because we might get to 2023 and some of this money is dried up, or it doesn't get spent, or potentially could be rescinded if Republicans take back control of Congress. So they are being a lot more cautious in terms of reducing actual tax rates because the state might need that revenue down the road.
Finally, Dan, one of your stories that was out there to take a look at in more detail is about a matter that has come up in federal court about trying to fill a vacancy on the Lake County Superior Court judgeship. Will you fill us in on what move is underway now, I guess now in federal court, to deal with this local judgeship?
Yeah, this looks like it's going to be an interesting dilemma for the next few months. So during the 2021 legislative session, back in April, the General Assembly changed how Lake County selects its judges, changes the makeup of the people who help Lake County select its judges. Mm-hmm. Lake County is one of four counties in the state where judges are appointed by the governor. The appointment gets made from a list of candidates that are sort of, let's say, vetted by a judicial nominating commission. And this legislature changed how the commission is who serves on the commission to give the governor more control over the process. And, the governor ultimately has total control over the process because he picks the person who gets to serve as judge. This wasn't going to be a problem until Judge Boswell died a few weeks back. And now there is a vacancy. So Mayor Thomas McDermott Jr. in Hammond and the city of Hammond filed suit to halt the filling of that vacancy because they claim that it's not fair under federal law, it's improper under the Federal Voting Rights Act, that Lake County isn't allowed to elect its judges. It's Lake County, St. Joseph County, which has South Bend, Allen County in Fort Wayne, and Marion County in Indianapolis. Are the four counties in the state where people, the residents, aren't allowed to elect their judges. They're all appointed by the governor. The lawsuit claims that this is done to prevent minority voters from having a say in who gets elected to these judgeships, because these four counties have the most minority voters in the state. In all 88 other counties, their judges are all elected by the people. So this lawsuit says, if it's good enough for those 88 counties, it should be good enough for these other four, and it seeks to stop the merit selection process and have all the judges be elected. The state is defending the law, the merit selection system in these four counties, so We'll see how it shakes out.
There's another topic that will come up again from not only from you and in the Times as well as to whether this Lake Superior Court judgeship gets filled anytime soon. Dan Carden is the chief political reporter for the Times of Northwest Indiana. Thank you for being with us to bring us up to date on what's happened to the State House and now a matter that's going to come up in the federal courthouse here in Northwest Indiana. Talk to you again soon about that. Thank you.
Yeah, always happy to be here, and happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. Same to you. And you're listening to Originally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. Carrie Napoleon's freelance reporter for the Post Tribune. And one of the stories that she's covered lately that we'll talk about today is one major project which could come to the city of Gary. In fact, it's at least from the city standpoint, something they're definitely looking forward to. And it's a project from a company out of California called Fulcrum Bioenergy. Will you tell us more, Carrie, about what this company wants to do and how the city of Gary is supporting it?
Hi, Chris. Surely. The city is looking to bring Fulcrum Bioenergy to the Buffington Harbor neighborhood. On Tuesday, the council did approve 6-2, the development agreement that kind of sets the path for this to actually happen. Mm-hmm. Fulcrum Bioenergy came to the city in 2018 to announce this project. They have a similar project that is underway right now in Reno, Nevada, called Sierra Energy. Now, that project has been under construction. Of course, COVID has delayed everything. Things were hoped to have been started much sooner than they have been, but COVID kind of put a slowdown on both that project and the one here in Gary. But the Sierra project is expected to be producing the fuel by the end of December. So that will be the first renewable biofuel to come out of Fulcrum's facilities.
Mm-hmm.
And this technology is all proven, which is kind of interesting. Fulcrum does not develop technology. They integrate it. So they're taking the technology that's been proven in gasification plants of different kinds, like coal to gasoline, over the past decades, and turning it into this gasification process of this feedstock made from municipal solid waste to turn into a renewable jet engine biofuel.
So I guess they're talking about being able to take household trash and some commercial and industrial trash, if it's usable, taking it in one side and then processing it and turning it into fuel at the other end, right?
Sort of. They won't be processing it on site. Gary has been very adamant about not wanting any more dumps, any more trash processing, anything like that within the city limits.
Mm-hmm.
So the company is building accessory facilities. One is supposed to be on the west side of Chicago, possibly in Hampshire. And the other, while they did not disclose the location, said it's about 25 to 30 miles south of Gary on I-65.
Okay.
So that's where the municipal waste will be brought, processed, and then they turn it into, they basically use the non-toxic portions of the solid waste, like cardboard, paper, plastic, things of that nature, and they turn it into this kind of like fluff material that is the feedstock that then in turn will be shipped to the Gary facility via truck, and processed using this high pressure gasification process into a fuel.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know you talk about in your story in the Post Tribune about how this project is going to be financed. They're doing it on bond issues and going through the process of that right now, too. But there's also a lot of processing concerns that have to be dealt with by the state, in this case, the Indiana Department of Environmental Management. And so that means permits have to be sought. Tell us how that process is coming along and how that's all going to fit together.
Exactly. They are going through the permitting process. The first process the first permit that should come up for public comment is the air quality permit.
Mm-hmm.
And they expect public comment to open on that in the coming weeks by early December, where people can actually comment, see a little bit more. The application for the air quality permit is already online and people can view that online. But the actual comment period hasn't quite opened up yet. But as soon as that does, people can comment on it. They do plan on having an informational session in the city that would be open to the public where people could come and ask questions about the air quality permit. And that is expected to take place in December as well. Once the public comment portion opens up, they expect to have that so people can comment on it. Now, this waste that they're processing, according to the Fulcrum folks, everything is non-toxic. They will be using water that is recycled water from the Gary Sanitary District. They won't be pulling water from the lake or dumping water back into the lake. It would all go back through Gary Processing or the Gary Sanitary District after they do a preliminary processing on the site to get the levels to an acceptable level by the Sanitary District before they ship it via sewer back there and then take more recycled water product and use that in the process. It is not supposed to make any toxic emissions, and people are justifiably concerned about that. Project will create a lot of jobs. It has the backing of the Indiana Finance Authority, which, unlike some projects that have vexed the city, like the Acumen purchase of the Gary Genesis Center, and there was no money for that.
Right.
And they kept saying, oh, we have backers, we have backers, we have backers. None of that ever really seemed to materialize. This, the money is already there. They have $500 million coming from, in bonds coming from the Indiana Finance Authority. $375 now, $125 in the spring, and they're making up, the company itself is making up the other $100 or so million to make the project come to fruition. So this project is fully funded. It looks like it would go forward unless something absolutely insane happens with the Sierra Energy Plant in Nevada.
Mm-hmm. Well, Carrie, thank you for the great information that you put out in the print and online in the Post Tribune about this Fulcrum bioenergy project that is definitely planning to come to Gary, and we hope to have you back on again soon. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. Anytime.
Global supply chain crisis, surging demand, and a shortage of workers leaving store shelves empty. As the holiday shopping season begins, Inside Indiana Business host Gary Dick recently spoke with Integrated Distribution Services CEO Mark DeFabis as he looks to the unique impact and the role that Indiana is playing in keeping things moving. Here's the conversation.
Mark, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here.
Your company, a longtime third-party logistics company here in Indiana, you're on the front lines here. Mark, give us an idea. We hear about the supply chain crisis every day, but some examples you're seeing out there of Indiana manufacturers, retailers, and others who are really impacted by this.
Yeah, certainly manufacturers are having a hard time getting component parts, especially if they're coming from overseas. And retailers now trying to get products from overseas in for holiday season. But I think, as typical, this is not the first time that supply chains have seen disruptions. So you're seeing many manufacturers and other retailers trying to, how do you overcome those disruptions? And that's usually with alternative means of transportation. It's usually dedicated. So they're either having to fly it in on planes, you're having a dedicated truck to bring it in, or even in some cases, dedicated ocean vessels to bring their containers in. But all that does is really add to inflation because the cost to circumvent from that standpoint is very, very expensive.
Yeah. So if you're a manufacturer, your company here in Indiana, and you're wanting to get a container from the West Coast here, what would be a normal wait time for that to happen versus what we're seeing now because of the supply chain issues?
Yeah, from the West Coast, almost every container has to go through Chicago before it's going to get to Indianapolis. We don't have a direct route. In a typical time, a wait time in Chicago's rail yards to get a container off onto a chassis so it can be transported down south would be about 3 days. Now you're seeing wait time significantly longer than that, and I think it's going to get even worse.
Yeah, and as you look at, Mark, obviously the truck driver shortage, the real issues in that industry, that began certainly before the pandemic and before this did, but exacerbated by this now, this truck driver, what can be done in your view as an executive in the industry? What would you like to see done to address some of these issues?
Well, really, it's all about velocity. We need to keep product moving in the supply chain. And of course, the vast majority of that moves by truck. Because we're not going to, I think, magically create more truck drivers overnight, we need to look at hours of service. Can those drivers that we currently have work maybe an hour or two longer because of all the dwell time that they have? The big thing is the Drive Safe Act, which has been in Congress since early this year, which would allow 18 to 21 year olds to drive across state lines. I mean, right now they can drive an 18 wheeler from from South Bend to Evansville, but they can't go from Evansville into Kentucky, which is a little ridiculous. That we need to do some innovative things in the short term like that to really be able to have more velocity within the supply chain.
Yeah, Mark, everyone wants to know, you know, when this is going to end or when it's going to get better. I know you and I were talking off camera before the interview. You don't think that's going to be anytime soon?
No, I think if you look at it, the issues that we have are not going to clear themselves overnight. We're not going to, within the next year, have hundreds, if not thousands, of more truck drivers. We're not going to have hundreds of thousands more trucks. You're not going to have more, thousands and hundreds of thousands of more chassis to pull containers. It's going to be a while before we work out of this. Now, there will be workarounds, and I think we'll continue to see manufacturers and retailers do workarounds for the bottlenecks that we have in the supply chain. But again, it's just going to be more expensive in the long run.
Yeah. Mark, you're a board member at Kinexus Indiana, that organization that is very supportive of the advanced manufacturing and logistics industries here. I know Kinexus is going to be involved in a listening event next week with members of the Indiana congressional delegation. What do you anticipate that conversation is going to be like? And is there a message or messages that will be delivered to the delegation?
Absolutely. Senator Braun and Senator Young have been gracious enough to host this event as a listening session so that we will have Indiana-based manufacturers as well as logistics companies to talk about the real-world problems that we're facing with the supply chain and really present to our delegation practical solutions, both some short-term, some long-term, that we need to start pursuing in order to correct this. Message that we hope to carry, and I think Indiana is well-positioned. Kinexus has done some studies already. We're about to complete another one about commodity movement, so we can take care of the bottlenecks and the issues that we have within the state. But the message that we're going to try to communicate to our congressional delegation, it's about velocity. We have to keep things moving in the supply chain.
All right. Mark DeFabe is CEO at Integrated Distribution Services. Mark, some great perspective on this very difficult issue. Mark, thanks very much. I hope to see you soon.
Thanks, Gary.
That was Inside Indiana Business host Gary Dick speaking with Mark DeFabis about the supply chain crisis across the country as we head into the holiday shopping season. And that's it for Regionally Speaking for today and for this week. I'm Chris Nolte, and our thanks to our guests, Times of Northwest Indiana Chief Political Reporter Dan Carden, and from the Post Tribune, freelance reporter Carrie Napoleon, for the stories they put out in print and online, and to Inside Indiana Business host Gary Dick for his conversation. And we'll be back with you on Monday.